From KALW and PRX, this is Inflection Point, stories of how women rise up. I'm Lauren Schiller.
Here's to the crazy ones.
Do you remember this ad from Apple?
Troublemakers. The ones who see things differently.
In 1997, when they mostly just made computers, they used all kinds of images of famous people to invoke this mindset.
Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
I loved this ad when it came out. Even though I felt manipulated, and even though I'm pretty sure nobody in that ad ever touched an Apple computer, they got one thing right. We have this idea of the radical genius, and that in fact, that genius lives within all of us. But how? How do we take this idea of this radical genius person and apply it to ourselves? Well, those people who go out and make change, Have you heard the expression, they put their pants on one leg at a time? What makes them different is that they're able to access the creativity that is innate to all of us and then work their butts off to bring their ideas to life. There are enormous problems in our world. Many we may feel we can't do anything about, but we can't just leave all the problem solving to someone else. Like Mrs. Einstein's husband said, the world is a dangerous place. Not because of those who do evil, but because of those who look on and do nothing. I'm Lauren Schiller, and this is Inflection Point, stories of how women rise up. So what does it take to come up with the ideas and do something? Does it all start with salad?
I'm going to give you five words.
I'm nervous.
I'm just going to make them up. Salad. Morose,
okay.
Purple, Wisconsin, and gigantic.
That's Katie Goodman. She's a professional improviser and a comedian. Over the last 20 years, her team has taught about 10,000 people, from individuals to corporate groups, how to use the tools of improv comedy in everyday life. Later in today's episode, I'll attempt to turn those five words you just heard into a story of sorts. I hope you'll play along with me, all in the spirit of this season's quest, to introduce you to those radical people who are reshaping the systems as we know them to get us closer to an equal society. And today, to hear how we can all be radicals. You've changed the lives of 10,000 people. Who could then go on to change the lives of 10,000 people each themselves. I mean, think of the magnitude of your work.
I know. And so on and so,
and so on.
And so on. I commercial from the 70s.
I miss that. I miss that ad so much. I wanted to come back. And I'm just curious, like, could you also just speak to the other aspects of what you do professionally?
I'm also a musical satirist. So I write a show with my husband called Broad Comedy, and it's sketch and musical satire. And we go around the world doing our shows, a lot of fundraisers, things like that. And it's all women's issues mostly. No improv in that, except in the, you know, creating process.
Excellent.
And I also run a camp. I do 20,000 things.
You run a camp?
I run a theater camp, yes. And I have a podcast, and I'm a speaker, and oh my God! I don't know what else I do.
You're an entrepreneur, and you have a kid. You're an entrepreneur. You constantly have to think on your feet, is what that says to me.
Right.
Yeah.
And come back from failure, because entrepreneurship is constantly, you know, having things that don't quite go the way you expected.
Yes. I just sat down with someone who took an improv class. We were having lunch, and he told me that one of the exercises is that they had to stand up in front of each other and raise their arms in the air and say something that they failed at that week, but say it ecstatically.
That's amazing. I spent too much on Facebook ads.
I failed to get
got nothing out of it.
I failed to get my child to school on time. Yes.
You can do that every week.
Totally. Yeah. So what I find really interesting about all of the things that you do is that all of them are about helping people think about things maybe differently than they might have walked into the room thinking about things.
what I teach are basically like 8 tools of improv. And some of them are kind of obvious ones, like be present and listen, you know, be flexible. You know, something comes at you you're not expecting, and you can't just go with what you were planning on doing before that person gave you some information for the scene. And other things like just how to trust yourself and get out of your own way and take creative risks. So all that good stuff. And I think the trick is our culture, it does not really, like the corporate culture, the ones that are not as innovative and used to this, really want you to come up like, I've got an idea and it's fully cooked and here it is. It's hard because the leadership does that too. And so everybody's a little bit nervous to come in with like a half-baked idea, you know?
Yes.
So you want the leadership to also be like, hey, we're just going to all throw stuff. What was the old saying? Like, and run it up the flagpole and see who salutes or whatever.
Throw it against the wall and
50s.
See what sticks.
From 12 Angry Men. So the trick is to, how do you become somebody who practices all these tools like every day? And the most important one, I think, is really giving up the goal. So you come into anything and you have this idea of what it's supposed to look like, or what success means, or what will make you happy, or what will make it work. And then, of course, it absolutely doesn't happen like that in almost anything in lives. I mean, it's kind of crazy that we still have this belief that it will be what we expect. And then life throws you 1,000 curveballs, and then you have to either you choke and you get frustrated and you get in fights, or you roll with it, or you, you know, collaborate and you, you know what, everybody knows the expression from improv, which is yes and. So I always explain that as somebody says, hey, look at that pink elephant. And you don't want to negate it and say, what pink elephant? Because then it just falls flat on the floor. But if you say, hey, look at that pink elephant, and the other person says, yes, and it's standing on my mother-in-law or whatever. Right. So it's like they accepted what you said, and then they added to it. So that's what the yes and idea is. And we can practice being more comfortable with that. And we can also practice, my other favorite one is being comfortable being lost. So my goal with all these people that I work with is to give them a taste of these tools, make it clear so they know what they're actually practicing, and then go home and practice it all the time. You know, practice it somewhere easy. Like, you might not want to start with your partner, but maybe, you know, try yes-anding the, you know, Starbucks person who gives you the wrong coffee or whatever. So it's kind of like, how do I just be somebody who, I never really use the term rolls with it, but that is kind of what we're doing.
Right. And building on what's in front of you instead of trying to push it away. Or achieve some. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this program is around perfection. And you've heard the expression, I'm sure, like perfection is the enemy of good, or great is the enemy of good, or, these sort of like whatever memes before there were memes.
Yeah.
Sayings about what you know, how to get around these norms, I guess, that have been established that aren't necessarily so good for you in terms of becoming better and that do get in your way. Like trying to be perfect, or like trying to present yourself in one way when really you're feeling another way on the inside.
And also just with projects, things like I have to have my, we were doing our new website, my website designer, we were just nitpicking. And finally he was like, look, we just have to ready, fire, aim this. And this was like 12 years ago. It was the first time I heard that. You know, so the idea is you cannot be totally, completely ready and aimed on the first time. You put it up. You get feedback, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. And then you're constantly re-aiming everything in your life. And that does count for parenting and relationships as well.
But I think the interesting thing about this idea of giving up the goal is that it doesn't necessarily mean giving up the objective. Like if there is a problem that you're trying to solve through your work, or, you know, your everyday action, or there's, you know, something in our society that just ain't right and you want to fix it, is the goal defined as the way you're going to go about that? And maybe if that doesn't work the way you're approaching it, you need to be willing to shift, but you can still have your same end objective.
Yeah. Like, let's take a surgeon, because that's pretty high stakes.
Let's take a surgeon. Where are we going?
My dad's a surgeon. So they have the goal of, you know, they're doing open heart surgery or whatever. They have the goal that the person's going to get off the table and go home to their family. But you get in the middle and you get into trouble and they bleed out or something crazy happens. And I mean, they have a series of things they know. Like, you don't totally want your surgeon improvising from scratch. But there are situations where my dad has told me these, like, amazing stories where they're like, they had never tried something before and they had to come up with something on the spot to save a life. And the end goal was still to save the life, like you're saying. There's no other goal for a surgeon. This is a weird example. But anyway.
I'm with you.
Yeah. But I think the problem would be is if you're like, no, we have to do this exactly the same way we learned in medical school, even if something's going wrong. You know? I mean, something more normal would be like, I've worked with like software engineers, or I've worked with a lot of women in leadership or something, you know, a woman running for office. The goal is the same, is to win. But you get in the middle and like some information comes out about the opponent, or, you know, there's some crazy gerrymandering happening or something. And you just have to totally get creative and come up with a whole new way to reach your constituents. But the goal is still the same.
And so actually, so what do you tell people to do then if they run into, I mean, it feels like there are always going to be forks in the road, right? Where you're like, you get to the point where you can come up with this, you know, radical idea, this thing that's going to change everything. Yeah. You're going to run into hurdles and you're going to have to make decisions about whether you just keep pushing forward or there's going to be naysayers.
Right.
Or at some point you have to say, this just isn't working. So how do you navigate those challenges?
I think that's really hard. I mean, first of all, when you're talking about radical, you're talking about something that's never been done before. It's like absolutely not how we would picture it, right? So really outside the box. And we need radical action because a lot of the things we're doing isn't working. Like an example would be like with climate change or something right now. What we don't need is as many radical ideas about technology to fix it. We need a radical idea about how to get the people in power on board to want to solve the problem, right? Because that's really the hangup. And I don't really see it working so much, you know? So like, at what point do you give up? I think that's an incredibly difficult thing to answer, because what we don't know is, let's say it was technology, okay, to fix whatever, global warming. We don't know if it's going to be the next idea around the corner, right? Like, you know, you hear all those stories, like, on my 99th try, I discovered the cure for cancer, whatever. So the problem is, it's kind of about like humans. It's about patience and determination. And if you want to, honestly, it's just a hard thing to answer. I think sometimes then you get someone who gets so irritated that it's not working. It does push them to go like way outside their own thinking. It's like giving up can actually lead to an advancement in a different way. You're like, you're giving up the way you were doing it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
It's hard to know, though, when to quit.
I mean, exactly. And one of the other things that you include in your toolkit is this idea that, like, tell your inner critic to just go away. Right? So, like,
yeah.
So on the one hand, you're like, go away, inner critic. And on the other hand, you're like, but I think I'm going to change my goal anyway. So I guess that's improv. You got to figure out which one you're going to use when. But how do you balance that?
So I have a whole big process about the inner critic. When I talk about the inner critic, I'm talking about something that is very judgy, right? So it never says something helpful. It's always like, you're too dumb. And it's not usually something you can argue. The inner coach, which is what I have this whole process to try to help people kind of like deal with this inner critic and make it have a, just like reassign its job, is something that has like neutral, objective information that is actually helpful. So, you know, like last time you applied for this job, you forgot to wear a suit and they didn't take you seriously. That's just like neutral, right? So that's just information. But the inner critic is like, you're too dumb to get the job. They didn't like you. And you can't really argue it. So the trick, I think, is trying to suss out, and I do have in my book and on my website, I do have a worksheet to work through this, but to figure out which it is. Is it an inner critic or is it like a coach that's actually sort of helpful? And you basically only want to listen to the coach.
The theme of this season is around, you know, I'm talking to the people who are out there doing radical things and changing the way, you know, just changing the status quo, to put it simply. But first, those things had to be ideas. So I want to talk a little bit more about how you help people, you know, get past the the usual way of solving a problem and into what could be considered a more radical approach, you know, just at the very beginning phases of even coming up with it.
Okay, so you've got one type, which is the eureka, where it just like pops into your head. And like the example would be from the movie On the Basis of Sex, you know how Ruth Bader Ginsburg's husband comes up with, this is not a spoiler, but he comes up with a way to argue sex discrimination that nobody had ever done before. And it was also discriminating against a guy, which would be more palatable, things like that. So it just occurred to him, like he's looking at a thing and then he's like, hey, oh my God, this makes sense. So it's sort of just putting two and two together, which is great if you're somebody who already is in the habit of thinking outside the box. Things will come to you more. Absolutely. Your mind is more open. You're more receptive. You're looking for connections all the time. It's just how your mind works, especially if you sort of play around in your right brain a lot. But if you don't do that normally, one thing you need to do is kind of like shake you off your beliefs, right? Shake you off your regular way of doing things. So what you never want is someone to say, hey, improv team, do a scene, go. Like they never don't give you anything, right? Because that would be like, my God, I've no, what? It's just too many choices. So constraint breeds creativity. And I love that idea. So when you're constrained by money for a nonprofit to sort things out, or by time, it helps you become more creative. So one, do you want to play a game?
I always want to play a game. Yes.
Okay. So this is a very easy, fun, simple beginning one.
Okay.
So this is, I'm going to have you actually do this and then I'll tell you a different game that you can play like with your family around the dinner table. But this one is just a 5-word monologue. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm giving you a very small stimulus of just 5 words and you have to tell me a story using those 5 words. So you were asking about how do you come up with ideas, right?
Yeah.
So you don't come up with ideas in a vacuum, ever. So one game or way to practice your brain is giving yourself, you can do this anytime, like circle 5 words in the newspaper, you tell a story using those 5 words, and it just makes you use your right brain a little bit more creatively. And if you want to do it on the subject of the thing you're trying to figure out, it will force you to look at it differently. Because you're like, oh my God, I have to get this ridiculous word into the middle of talking about how to solve climate change, right? Mm-hmm. And it just makes sort of your brain work in a different way than normal. So let's try it and then let's talk about it.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you 5 words.
I'm nervous.
I'm just going to make them up. Here, maybe you should write them down real quick.
I'm writing them down. I have no memory.
Okay.
Yes, go.
let's see. Salad. Morose.
Okay.
Purple. Wisconsin, and gigantic. So you tell us a story, and you just need to get them in. They don't have to be in order, but you have to take at least like 45 seconds. Don't just put them all in the first sentence.
Okay.
So sprinkle them throughout.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story using these 5 words.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the other day I was in Wisconsin, and I ran into this gigantic mountain of snow. But what was weird is that part of it was kind of covered in this purple coating. And next to me was this woman eating a salad. But you know how normally, like, you see pictures of women laughing alone eating salad? She was not laughing. She was totally morose. How's that?
Good. That's great. I wasn't sure if you were going to end.
Good. Yeah. I know. I feel like okay. I didn't. Like, I feel like I wanted to have like more stakes and like, you know, like a resolution, like a normal story would have. But that was just a scene. I guess I just set a scene being in Wisconsin
great.
With this weird purple mountain.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it sounded to me like it was fairly easy for you. Was that true?
I like playing with words like that. Yeah, that didn't feel hard.
Okay.
But like I said, like I was sort of struggling to like create some action, you know, that can be resolved. But I don't know if that's important to your story. I don't know.
No, it's not for what we're doing right now.
Okay.
I mean, if you were doing like a scene, it would be. But no, this is just an exercise. So for some people, when I do this with a group, literally half the room, because they're doing it in small groups of 5 in front of people. So there's this like performance aspect that makes some people nervous. For some people, they love it because they're like, oh my God, I don't have to like collaborate with anybody. This is so easy. I don't have to get hung up by what their thing is. And then the other half, I'm sort of, guys, like 50-50 all the time. The other half of the group is like, oh my God, this was so hard by myself. I didn't have somebody else to bounce things off of.
Hmm.
So it's kind of interesting to just sort of know that about yourself, just to sort of figure out which of those is your thing. And then the other thing I thought was interesting is with the salad part, you made that joke about women. And what you did is you took your own authentic experience that nobody else has, right? So one of the things that's empowering about it is you're like, oh, I absolutely have something of value to bring to the table because I am the only one who's had my exact experience. So you're not competing. And as a sort of self-confidence building tool, I think that's really important. But we started this whole thing like, why are we using this way? And if you had there's a lot of different games I could do, but if you were sort of frustrated with your work life or something, anything that you can do to maybe journal, like take 5 words and do this as a journaling exercise about the problem, will force you to look at it in a different way. And in a very easy way, it'll force you because you have the stimulus that you couldn't have planned for. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But the one that I think is really fun as a collaborative game, it's super easy. I just want to tell your listeners because it's fun to do like around the dinner table with family, or it could be horrible at a family reunion, but, you know, just anyway, let's just say that your family wants to play.
Okay.
Is called One Word Story. And each person, you tell a story as a group, but each person can only say one word. So you go in a circle. So it's like the dog went to the store and, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, but you're going around in a circle. And what's cool about that is like, you have no idea what's coming at you. So you cannot plan. You just can't plan at all. That's really hard for some people because they get this cool idea and they're like, I have the funniest thing to say. And it comes to them and it's like totally unusable. So it's how do you stay in the moment and how do you react to the other creative stimulus that's coming to you? That's a yes and.
So we've established that you've done this with over 10,000 people. What is a situation where you've been in where there's just, you know, there's sometimes that person in the room, they've got their arms crossed, they've got their legs crossed, they've got the whole, like, they're barely looking at you, they've got the body language. I mean, I'm asking this question for kind of a bigger reason, but yeah. How do you get that person on board?
I've always been of the mind, and I teach my staff this at my camp, which is you just have to be more fun than anything they could think of to be distracting. But if somebody, if somebody's really like Debbie Downer about it, the reason they don't want to do it, it might be because they just think you're stupid and it's stupid. But generally, it's because they're a little nervous, and that's a defense mechanism. So I think the trick is to do something super simple, like the one word story to start with, and let them. I often let people just sit out until they're kind of ready. I don't know. I don't have that experience very much because we're mostly having fun and people jump in.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better when they're just working one-on-one instead of like right in front of the whole group too.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, because one of the things that I've been thinking about is, well, I've been thinking on a couple of tracks here around this ultimate goal that I think many of us share, which is that we want to live in an equal society. Where everyone is equal. Everyone has the chance to rise up to their full potential. Mm-hmm. And feminists, even the men in our lives who would consider themselves feminists, they don't always want to play because they're like, I'm already doing enough. And I am one of the things that I've been trying to figure out is how do we talk to people who feel like they're already doing enough or who don't want to participate at all and don't even really have the time to listen to you to give them something that makes them interested and motivated to participate in coming up with a new way of thinking about things or doing things.
Yeah, I think they have to see the result, right? So they have to see that it worked for somebody else in another setting. Again, it could be like in, you know, biology or something where they saw how innovation and thinking outside the box really helped. Or they have to see somebody they work with, which is why it's really important for the leaders to be comfortable with this stuff so they can kind of set the tone for everybody else.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that YouTube video, The Lone Nut? Are you familiar with this concept? Oh, this is so cool. Okay. Everyone go to YouTube when you're done listening and Google The Lone Nut. There's a bunch of different versions of it out there, but the gist of it is that there's this guy at a concert and he gets up and starts dancing by himself. And it isn't until the second person comes up and starts dancing with him that more people then gather around. And then suddenly there are hundreds of people dancing.
Yeah.
And so it's this idea that there's, you know, like this lone nut out there and he's going to be alone until somebody else comes on board with the idea. And that's when the critical mass tips. So
just, yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So it's back to your idea. How long does the lone nut keep going before he stops?
Exactly. Everyone needs to just try this at home, right? But there are these amazing ideas out there. And having an idea is one thing, but putting it into action is another. What advice do you have for people who are like, this is it, this is the idea, this is the thing that's going to change the problem that I want to solve and move into the testing phase and bringing more people on board and figuring out who's willing to participate? Do you have ideas for that?
I think we talked a little tiny bit about it in terms of the Ready, Fire, Aim. So I think the idea is you just cannot, the trick is not waiting and waiting until it's perfect to try it. But, and if you, and also I think it's having a, I mean, it's hard because some people are stuck with a team that's not great at these things. But if you are able to pick your team, especially for like, if you have a committee or something that's trying to create something new, you know, and you have one person or a couple people on your team who are not going to take creative risk, like they just should not be on the team, or they should go take an improv workshop first. Like that's going to just hold the group back. So I think the idea is to either figure out how to engage them so they are on board, like we were just talking about, so they're on board and they see that it's going to be worthwhile. But if they're the kind of person that's just blocks everything, it's hard. I mean, that's just really hard. So you're talking about testing an idea, though. So I guess I just feel like you just try. It depends on how high the stakes are. But of course, back to the surgery thing, you know, like you do want your surgeon to have it perfect before she tries a new surgery. But that isn't how it works, even in medicine. You know, they try it. A few people die with a new surgery and then they make it better. I mean, literally. So, you know, you have to try. You just have to step up and try.
Yeah. I appreciated the maniacal laugh around, you have to try it, people are going to have to die. That's not funny. It's not funny, but it's one of, you know, you're like taking
it's
it
what
to.
What happens.
Right, and you're taking it to illustrate a point. I'm Lauren Schiller, talking with Katie Goodman, improv coach, actor, and comedian, about how we can all think more radically. This is Inflection Point. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and NPR One, and support our show financially, all at inflectionpointradio.org. Coming up,
there's so many little radical acts that people can just do every day.
This is Inflection Point. I'm Lauren Schiller, talking with Katie Goodman, improv coach, actor, and comedian, about how we can all think more radically. You're obviously, you know, tapped into our times and thinking about these things from a progressive feminist perspective. What would you like to see solved in today's unequal world?
Oh,
I mean, what is the, well, like, what are the radical, you know, like, what do we need to apply some radical thinking to?
We're radical thinking. Well, poverty, and some people have done that. You know, you can see these amazing NGOs, nonprofit organizations really doing creative, incredible things. You know, I mean, it's something like we have the resources as a planet to deal with poverty, and we just have to figure out how to distribute them. And that is going to take, again, it's a lot has to do with leadership, too. I think like women's equality, although that is moving in the right direction pretty faster than normal right now, which is nice. I think racism, I would love to have some radical thoughts, because racism is thoughts. It's all preconceived thoughts. That's all it is. So changing thoughts is possible. So I feel hopeful about that, even though it's a very difficult time right now. And then climate change is the one that I get a little bit more like, about. But I think, you know, like I said, we need radical ideas that are going to inspire the leaders to change their action or their interaction, you know.
Yeah.
So,
what, as in you don't think what say more about
I feel a little hopeless. I feel a little hopeless about the climate change stuff, which is not a radical act to feel hopeless. That is not what I want to. I don't want to be that person. But no buts, but and.
Yes, and.
That's hard. Yes, and. That's hard. And I will still keep trying. And I hope the next generations can figure stuff out better than we can, because we're not doing a very good job at it. You know?
It's really interesting, too, which ideas do eventually take off and get traction and get support and get leadership around.
Yeah.
And you said you have to have, 98 ideas before the 99th one actually sticks. And that is... Yeah, I feel like with many of these things, that's kind of where we are right now. And sometimes that 99th idea was come up with first by someone who just wasn't listened to.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, that's my thing. Yes. Oh, God. Right. And it's always the woman.
Quite often.
I mean, it is. I'm not even just being like, it is hard to sometimes to be generous. It is occasionally hard to hear a great idea. And it has to come up more than once. But to not be generous, it would be good if everybody listened to each other better, especially the women who don't get listened to as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's getting better. I do think it's getting better. And I think women are getting better at speaking up. You know, I get called into, like, I can't say which ones, but big financial institutions to work with the young women in executives and like under 30. And it's interesting because these women are like, they're from Harvard. And yeah, I mean, they're so smart and educated, and then they won't speak up. And then their bosses are coming to me like, oh, my God, help. We have to get these women speaking up now. We can't wait till they're 40, you know.
Is it important to know whether the bosses are male or female in this story?
Oh, they're women bosses who bring me in, usually. Okay. I mean, I imagine that's interesting. I'm sure I think it's because they run, like, the young women's leadership thing in the company. But there's certainly lovely men out there who are wanting to help.
Yeah. Let's dig into that for a second. So they want the women that work for them to speak up more. And you're surprised because these are women who have already demonstrated, a certain level of ability to get things done or to at least get into a great school and graduate from it. And they're feeling reticent to speak up. So this goes back to so the lean in philosophy is getting a lot of flack these days, you might have heard. let's set aside, where the creator of that idea works, because that's a whole other topic. But that it's only one side of the equation getting these women to speak up, right? That there does need to be somebody who's listening to them. So do you get to work with those people too and build this?
Yeah.
I mean, you started to talk about this earlier on in our conversation that you need to have everyone who's involved be willing to yes and things, right? And to take a little bit of risk.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Me Too stuff, which is the big conversation around whether the women all have to speak up or the men have to help make the women's world better. And that argument will just go on forever. I mean, I would hope both would be great. I got a little sidetracked there. What was your question again?
That's totally my question.
Your question?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what is like that is totally at the heart of my question. You did not get sidetracked. The heart of my question is women can speak up until they have, they're sore in the throat. But if no one is listening or taking them seriously, then it feels like they're only going to go so far. So how do we bring those two things together?
Well, I think some of it is just what we're used to seeing and doing and things like that. Like when I was just saying earlier in this conversation about the surgeon and I used the pronoun she, like I had to consciously do that. And I forget to do that all the time. And I hear like some great men speakers who are always talking about she as examples of leaders. And it strikes me because we're still not used to that, right? Like when they're talking about the generic, So I think some of it is, it's like Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, where he talked about you're just so used to seeing things together. Like, they had that test where you put the items together really fast. And it was like he ended up, and he's half black and he did this totally racist answer. And he's like, oh, my God, what did I do? And then the women also put like the mom and the baby together and the dad and the money together or something or the car.
These are the biases, the implicit bias test. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of it was what he was saying was that it's so unconscious. It's happening preconsciously because we've seen those images for so long. So what's happening now is, as we're seeing women, in, you know, it's just going to, it is, it's going to change. It's happening right before our eyes. I mean, you're seeing, you know, a woman run for president or whatever. You have the image, like these little 8-year-old girls have that, where you and I didn't have that. So you can picture it. It's imaginable.
Yeah. And back to, you know, is there a model out there for what you're doing, or do you need to come up with it all on
right.
your own?
So somebody has to come up with it and think outside the box radically. And then the rest of us have to get to see it so that we can, especially if we're not outside the box thinkers, change the world by having these great examples. But it goes back to, yeah, the radical idea. God, it's so interesting, like, just even thinking about how recent it was, 100 years ago or whatever, you know, Susan B. Anthony and things like that, having such incredible radical things like women voting. It's just mind-boggling.
I know, isn't it? Just, I actually, like, I guess maybe especially because I'm working on this season now, but I feel like I just walk down the street and I'm like pondering how it could possibly ever be that not everyone in this country would have a voice.
Right.
And the fact that somebody had to, like, demand, I mean, many somebodies had to make that happen, that it wasn't already baked into the system. And then you think, wow, what, that we live in this crazy system where that was not part of the construction of our world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to correct that is a radical thing to do. And I feel like there are many of those radical actions just waiting to be taken that are positive. You know, I think radical actually has sort of a weird connotation that it could also be seen as something really bad, you know, like radical groups.
They're crazy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think redefining radical as something positive.
Yeah, it's like, take back the word.
Yeah.
Like queer or something. I'm radical. But
radical.
Also, it doesn't have to be big. Like, I think that's the other thing. It's so hard when you see, like, an entire, you know, country's climate change decisions not going in the right direction because of a small group of people. So then you think, I have to do something huge to counter that. Like, the only answer to that is to get somebody else in office, which maybe, but there's so many little radical acts that people can just do every day. You know, even like even listening, like even giving women the floor in a staff meeting or something like that, like making room for somebody who talks slowly and doesn't speak up or something like that, you know, who you don't, I don't mean talk slowly, they don't jump in. And so they, you know, something small just every day. It seems radical, like lots of little radical acts.
Yeah.
Make one big one.
Yeah.
But that's back to my opening sort of part of this whole thing, which is that this is all a practice. And I think what I like is, you know, giving people sort of an experience. And this is what you're asking before, like, how do they get buy-in? Well, they see that it helped them in some way. And they're like, oh, either I didn't know I could do that, or, oh, God, this is such a better way to do things and live life and think. And then they want more. And then they're like, ah, I got to make this part of my life. And, you know, I mean, this happened because I was like a yoga teacher. And when I was trying to make a living early on in my 20s as an actor, and I was doing improv, and I was also working with young girls, teaching them improv. And they were coming up with material, because it was an all girls group for some reason one time. They were coming up with material that never would have happened if there had been boys in the room. These were like sixth graders, like they're giving birth, like joking, and like there's doctors running around, you know? And I was like, oh my God. First of all, I thought, this is really interesting, having just a room of young women being able to speak their minds. But then I also thought, wow, all the things I'm learning in yoga are all the same things I'm learning in improv and I'm trying to apply to my life. And so that's when I got excited and created the workshop and my book and stuff.
What I love about everything that you've told me about your personal and professional life is that first of all, that they are intertwined, they're not disconnected, that one thing builds on the next thing, which is a very improv way of living life. That also you're taking the learning from one thing and applying it to another. And one of the tools that you talk about is this need to stay present. And that was actually my New Year's resolution, for what it's worth, for 2019, was to stay in the moment. And with so much distraction happening, it's very, very hard to stay present. What's the best advice that you've ever been given about how to stay present?
Yeah, and I'm not even sure it's present. Mindful might be a better word for that, because actually when you are looking at social media, you're very present with the social media.
Yeah.
But the idea is to be mindful that it's not just like tick, tick, tick going by, having all this influence of stuff you don't want to be influenced by, including feeling, you know, I don't actually spend a lot of time on social media, but like people say, you know, jealousy and just sort of confusion generally. What is the best way to stay mindful? Well, my husband's a practice. He's an ordained Buddhist, so our house is filled with mindfulness, except when it's not. I guess I would say it's one of my Zen teachers, Sherry Huber, used to say that any commitment practice is a recommitment practice because you inevitably blow it. And so this is probably good for your resolution, right? So the whole point is not, did I make it 30 days? The whole point is, did I make it one day? And then did I try again a second day and then a third day? And so that's sort of this mindful being present, letting go of the past, like, oh, I screwed up yesterday, so forget it. You know, I'm done. Like, that's classic, right? So the idea is, nope, I'm just going to be here. And if I continue this tomorrow is irrelevant. And if I messed up yesterday is irrelevant. So that's being present, mindful at the same time in sort of a little package.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other thing, like on stage for me, I'll give you an example with improv specifically. So I'm very visual and I like stuff. So on stage, if I'm getting distracted by the audience or my thoughts start going like, uh-oh, I don't have an idea. Uh-oh, you know, that kind of blanking. I look directly at the person in front of me, the actor, and I really like hone in on what they're doing. So it becomes less about me and more about how I can support them. And there's a company called Improv Olympic IO that their rule is your entire job is to make the other person look good. Mm. And I love that. Like, what a great way to live instead of trying to make yourself look good, you know? But you have to be really present for that.
Yeah.
It's a good way to practice it.
And confident.
Mm-hmm. And you can do that. Yeah. You can do that. You're just being present with them.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you can do that with your kids instead of like, I've got an agenda. You know, you can just be like, God, what does this little being need?
Whether you're just trying to change how your day goes or how someone else's day goes, this mindset of flexibility and resilience makes us more nimble and more able to act in the moment, even when things don't go as planned. Able to give up the goal without giving up the game. And able to unleash your inner radical. Katie Goodman is a speaker, author, comedian, and coach. And she even has a podcast called The Improvised Life with Katie Goodman. We'll put a link to all things Katie, including her 8 tools of improv comedy, on our website, inflectionpointradio.org. This is Inflection Point. I'm Lauren Schiller, and this is how women rise up. That's our Inflection Point for today. All of our episodes are on Apple Podcasts, Radio Public, Stitcher, and NPR One. Give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast. Know a woman with a great rising up story? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. While you're there, I invite you to support Inflection Point with a monthly or one-time contribution. Your support keeps women's stories front and center. Just go to inflectionpointradio.org. We're on Facebook at Inflection Point Radio. Follow us and follow me on Twitter at LA Schiller. To find out more about the guests you heard today and to sign up for our email newsletter, you know where to go, inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced in partnership with KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco and PRX. Our story editor and content manager is Alora Weaver. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.